Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, guys. Hey, how's it going, everybody out there? It is Friday, the 11th, and not the 12th. So anyway, all is swell. Everything is going A-OK. I haven't gotten hit by lightning yet, you know, so I still have that going for me, of course. I guess otherwise I probably wouldn't be here doing an announcement. Anyway, so I've got a bye, Yola. Oh, looks like it's me and Ron. So I've got to refresh the page, so it's probably going to boot you out. And that's because some of the control options on the control panel in the admin are not working. So I'm going to refresh the page. So if you get booted out, you'll have to obviously refresh your page as well or something to that effect. But you'll be able to get back in because it seems as of the last 4 weeks, I try to get on the air and do a show. This is what happens to me, so I end up having to refresh and reboot and do all kinds of, stuff to get this features to work. So here we go. There I am. Well, I'm not sure if it's working for you guys. my the chat chat screen on here is going a little AWOL. I'm not sure what's happening. I'm going to try refreshing this one more time, guys. I'm sorry. But I can't see who's doing what and what's going on where and so on and blah, blah, blah. So we got to get this fixed. All right. So hopefully, let's see if we can get the, oh, it connected finally. All right. It worked. Ta-da. Well, I finally got it to work. Yay. Anyway, so it's finally functioning. I don't know what's up, man. There must be something up with their servers or something here for Blog Talk because I can't, I don't know. I just, I'm not, I just don't get it sometimes. I mean, it either works, yeah, you know, it either works or doesn't at all. I mean, it's got to be something. I mean, it has to. Maybe that's it. But then, you know, I mean, that at least makes sense or justify it. They need to invest some money into their network or something or figure out what the heck. I mean, considering as much money these people probably make on this service, invest in a more solid connection or network. I mean, the platform's easy to operate, so it's user-friendly, which is great, but I just get all kinds of abused on this system sometimes. I mean, in the beginning, I was able to log in and, you know, do whatever and, you know, not have any issues. You know, like, you know, the host or in the call-in box on the one side of the admin panel where it shows who calls in and their phone number and all that stuff. The last few dozen shows or last probably 7-8 shows, even prior to me coming up missing in hiatus, missing my one batch of shows, you know, I was still having all kinds of fun and trouble trying to get in. Anyway, so in the chat room there, what's that, Ron? You never knew India reorganized into a central bank in 34? I wouldn't doubt it. That don't surprise me. Especially some of those, well, not that India's small, but, you know, some of them, a lot of those, well, okay, like my thought was a lot of the smaller third world type countries, they would have done that a long time ago just because, you know, easier preparation back then, less red tape to go through, you know, all that stuff. Yeah, I seen that link up there earlier. I'll try to check it out. But that's just, well, you know, icing on the cake. I mean, they didn't ever announce really or make a whole lot of hoopla announcement that they put a World Bank in, you know, Iran and or Iraq, was it Iraq just last year? You know? So, you know, I mean, was it last year? Was it last year or the year before? Yeah, I think it was 2011. Early 2011, they put in a World Bank in there. So, you know, what the heck's going on with that stuff? But anyway, so aside from our usual gabbing of real estate issues, I was going to dip into some other stuff, kind of make it free for all for a while. Did you catch, I don't know if you guys caught on the other day, China's little stunt in buying oil? Wasn't that dandy? Purchasing oil using the yen. That was really great. That was the icing on the cake there. So now that they've done tested the waters, I'm sure every other country and continent and nation in the world is going to do the same thing now that, you know, they've done it. So everybody else is going to say, well, why can't we? And that's just going to be, you know, yon, yen, whatever. Yeah, the yen is Japan. Won, I can't, well, however you pronounce it. Either way, it's screwy. It could be duct tape, duck it, you know. For all I give a crap, the point is that, you know, what they did was illegal as crap. I mean, it was just a total, they're trying to, you know, they're, you know, even, right, even though they're buying it with gold and all that stuff, they're still breaking the trade agreements and doing all that stuff and blah, blah, blah. So now that they've done, you know, everybody's seeing it happen, guess what? That's the final piece of the puzzle. That's the damn, you know, that's the starting wave of, you know, the end of our economy. And that wonderful green strip of paper you carry around in your pocket that everybody works so hard to get their hands on. Because now that they've done that, you know, I mean, what's America going to do to China, right? Not a darn thing. You know, what are they going to do, slap the hand of the country that owns 90% of their debt? I think not. And since that's not going to happen, and everybody knows it, the rest of the world's going to follow. Everybody else could do the same thing. China, India's already doing their crap, buying in gold, and all these other countries are doing the same thing, and blah, blah, blah. It's leading to that wonderful train wreck that we all, you know, are expecting to happen. And it just makes me sick. I mean, it's just disgusting and how they're going to be able to do this and not even, you know, bat an eye at it and think about the ramifications. Well, I mean, they know what's going to happen. They collapse the dollar, and everybody's obviously going to be, well, broke, just the way they want us. So, you know, it just can't even put words to it. Really can't. Makes my stomach turn. You know, I knew about this or heard about this coming on about 2 years ago, and it just, it's mind-numbing to think that, you know, these events that we've been reading about are coming true. But anyway, we got a caller, so we're going to zap him in on the line because it's Ron.
Hey, Brian, how's it going, man?
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, bud, how's it going?
It's going well. You know, I was calling in. You were talking about China buying oil from Iran for the yuan or the renminbi.
Yeah, that's yuan.
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, screwy names. But, you know, I found it interesting. A lot of people have forgotten there was a story. Oh, gosh, it's been a couple of years ago now where there was an underwater internet cable that was cut.
Yeah.
Over in the Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
We cut that cable in the United States.
Right.
And the reason we cut it was because of what Iran was doing. Iran opened their own oil bourse. Oil bourse is like a mercantile exchange or a commodities exchange.
Mm-hmm.
Where they sell oil.
Right.
Much like the New York Mercantile Exchange or the ICE in London. We didn't like that much. You know, it was kind of like Saddam getting in trouble for the oil for food scandal thing with the UN.
Mm-hmm.
So we cut their internet cable because without internet, it's kind of tough to do volume trading in oil with countries like India and China and others. India already inked $12.5 billion deal with Iran to buy oil with gold, which is why I put up that link in the chat. There seems that there is an enterprising young man in India that is suing the government to repatriate 265 tons of the country's gold that is allegedly held in the Bank of England.
Wow.
And if that happens, there's going to be some boys over in the Bank of England that are going to be tapping gold bars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
yep.
Well, you know, that goes to show you. And, you know, some of that gold's probably coming out of those mines out of Iraq.
265.49 tons of gold.
Yeah.
Evidently, according to their Central Banking Act of 1934, Section 33, Subsection 5 of the Reserve Bank Act stipulates that the Reserve Bank has to keep 85% of the country's gold reserves in India.
Hmm.
And this guy found that, and so he's suing the government or the central bank in India. I think that's pretty interesting. That might cause a huge move in the gold market.
Oh, yeah.
Because these guys are, you know, I mean, you know they're shorting it. They're short on it over the place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's definitely going to... Mercy.
That would be caught with your proverbial pants down because they can't just, you know, create 269 tons of gold.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to accept paper.
Wow. Yeah, man. Yeah, that's, and gold, well, gold's at $1,500 an ounce right now. Hmm.
Yep, and I was reading Goldman Sachs thinks it'll be $18.95 within the next 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but yeah, most definitely. And I say
going
that
on in the commodities market.
Well, I say that too because part of what's not being talked about a lot still is what's going on over in Africa. And I think with the war, the issues over there, plus that fairway they were blocking off, was it not the Indian Ocean? You know what I'm talking about.
You're talking about the Straits of Hormuz?
Yeah. When they were talking about doing that block off and everything.
Right.
I think there's a whole bunch more flying off because, like, I've got some family members that are currently on battleships sitting over that way and just waiting. So, you know, there's got to be a reason. I mean, there's a reason, obviously, why they're going to be sitting out there traveling. You know, I mean, for the most part, one of them's over in Africa on a battleship, you know, or a carrier hanging out, and the other one's over there, you know, on the other side, you know, hanging, you know, in that strait. And it's not a lot's being talked about or done at the moment, but I think something crazy is going to happen because, you know.
Well, I think you're going to see Israel attack Iran. Look, our government knows, and so does Israel, and the intelligence agencies know, that Iran is much like Iraq, you know, they're a paper tiger.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get up there and beat their chest and act somewhat foolish or, you know,
right,
vaguely threatening just to save face. I mean, that's the culture. You
right.
Look at Saddam Hussein, he didn't have jack, okay? He didn't have, I mean, there were no weapons of mass destruction and all this crap. That was all a bunch of contrived BS.
Right.
But the reason that he stood his ground is because he feared Iran as much as he feared the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he underestimated us and didn't think we'd actually go in there and kill him, especially after the first go-around when we let him go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, there's a lot to say for Israel. I mean, you know, for them to go bumping heads, you know, anybody to go bumping heads with them, you know, hey.
Well, you got to have a death wedge.
Yeah, I mean, you really, I mean, I keep trying to figure out why, you know, like, well,
they're
I know
not polite. Israel is not polite. They don't play political war.
No.
They don't play
no.
political war like the U.S. They'll go in and kick the crap out of you.
Yeah, I mean, they don't. I mean, they just...
Collateral damage, they don't give a shit.
Yeah, they're going to blow your ass up, and they're not going to come back and give you a return. They're going to come go over, hand your ass to you on a silver platter, and they're not going to come back and rebuild the country. It's going to be a Starbucks as far as they're concerned.
You know, right. And see, that's this is where I don't understand. You know, I think that coincides with Ron Paul's defense plan on national defense. You go in, you fight the war, you use everything in your ability to defeat your enemy, and then come home
mm-hmm.
and let them rebuild their shit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people get that. I don't think I don't know why they don't understand that about the war.
Right. I mean, when they started doing that, I remember being, you know, younger and hearing about that, you know. I mean, when you growing up as a little boy, you go over and you get in a fight with the neighbor kid, you beat the piss out of each other. You don't go back home and give them stitches, you know. You go home and you take care of your own butt, and that's how it went. So, you know, you're hearing about war and learning about that stuff in school and growing up. You know, Napoleon didn't go blow anybody up and go back and rebuild their houses. You know, so why in the, you know.
Well, you can go back in history. Now, the Romans did it. Alexander the Great did it, where they would go in and destroy cities and then they would rebuild. But that's because they were building an empire.
Right, right. Well, they had, you know.
We're doing, which is why Ron Paul talks about empire building. But nobody right. seems to get that connection, that correlation.
Right. I mean, to go over, you know, just Israel has, you know, as far as my understanding and I've ever known anything about them is that, you know, they have, you know, like the baddest air force. I mean,
they have all the best technology that we've developed here in the U.S.
Right. I mean, and they've taken our stuff and learned how to use it better than we know how to use it.
Yep.
We might have made it. That don't mean jack and squat, that's for sure, because they proved that, you know. So, you know, if we have to go into a war with them and sweat it out and wonder, you know, and kind of really contemplate, would that be a smart move? Then somebody like Iran or Iraq or any one of them guys had better think twice. You
right.
know, but
well, you know.
I guess, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink it. I mean, you can tell him a million times, you know.
That's one of the things I've pointed out, you know. You look at all you have to do is look as far as, you know, Saddam Hussein and Iran, and they fought it to a draw for 10 years. We rolled into Iraq and kicked his ass in a matter of days. And
yeah.
that was being polite. We were playing footsie war. We
yeah.
weren't actually playing war. We weren't playing, by God, kill the enemy. You know, we were playing political war. They pose no threat to this country.
Right.
And the idiots that are in power, the Ayatollahs, you know, you don't see those guys strapping on bomb vests anywhere.
Right.
They get the CIA operatives to do that for them, the inside guys, you know, to test it out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah,
that
most definitely.
The CIA can come out and say, look, we foiled another bomb plot. We
yeah.
caught four mentally retarded men going to storm Fort Dix with Swiss Army knives, you know? I mean, holy crap.
It's like a bunch of guys from that movie, The Holy Grail, running around with coconuts like they're flopping around on horses, you know?
Exactly. And the public just eats up. Although I think this last go-around, I think everybody kind of rolled their eyes and said, really? This is the best you've got?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they even, you know, when Ron Paul's gotten on the air and said, hey, you know, why are we going to go help Israel? I mean, seriously, you know, he's like, even he said they're a superpower, you know, and we have no business going over to back them, you know, he's, you know.
Well, Netanyahu said, we don't need your help. Just stay the hell out of the way.
Right. Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, just stay home and, you know, if we need something, we may call, but, you know, I wouldn't lose sleep over the fact that they might because of who they are. So, you know, our president, of course, has got to go and, you know, going to go gamble with the top five banks and see who will finance
big betting, military action.
You know, right. They're going to go start some bidding, you know, action on who's going to win and do what. And, you know, make a few bucks off this deal, and then still try to throw our crew in on it, you know? I mean, that's how the banks work.
They absolutely. They get everybody. 20 to 1 odds down at the casino.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you know, bunch of gambling sharks. You got a, you know, big old 80-story building on Wall Street flipping, you know, putting odds charts across the, you know.
You know, I get so pissed off. And there comes a point in time when you just have to say, you know, enough is enough. You're sitting here and we've got billions and billions of dollars going out in bogus effing tax refunds to illegals who can claim, you know, 20 nieces and nephews that live in friggin' Mexico on their tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here trying to support my family and help my children as well and my dad. And, you know, I pay in an exorbitant amount of money and they want their 125 grand and I'm telling them to blow it out their nostrils.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we're spending $3.7 million a year to keep former presidents in the lap of luxury. It's insane. It's enough to make blood shoot out of your eyes and make you want to go pick up a gun and start shooting people.
Oh, right.
Just on general principle,
you
know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Right. I mean, and now they're acting like, you know, again, there were little hints being popped out again that, you know, the banks are going to start trying to ask for another bailout because of the market crap, you know?
Right. Well, that's the thing. Because we didn't see a QE3, the banks reacted negatively. And then you've got Jamie Dimon coming out all embarrassed because they lost, you know, $2.5 trillion in bad gambling bets. And I'm like, you know what? Tough shit, guys. I mean, I'm sick of it. I'm absolutely sick and tired of it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And with probably another 5 to 6, 7 million, you know, foreclosures by the end of this year again coming through.
I was talking to one of my customers, and he said he was telling me that he thinks that the area that we live in and the area where I work has that demographic has the largest per capita credit card debt in the country. Okay, there's people up there living in $1.5 million homes. $1.5 million homes, and they don't have $1,000 worth of furniture in the house. And the housing market is south. He told me he thinks that once the school year ends, we're going to see a mass exodus in this area.
That might happen that way, but, you know... Foreclosures are foreclosures, and there's another cycle coming up in California in the next month and a half or two. I don't think it's going to be within the next two months. Let's just say. So they're estimating roughly a few hundred thousand to a couple of million. That wave is also going to be slapped across the states all in one setting because if they're going through a cycle, pretty much that means there's a whole other mid-level cycle just branching across the states. So you add 48 other states, that's going to be huge. So,
yep.
You know, by the time it gets within the same week or so or same period, it hits you guys over there. I mean, you're going to be a few hundred thousand to a million or two out of property before the school season's up. And people are either going to be trying to make the choice to move and try to sell as an owner, you know, sell it as owner.
Right, do a short sell or...
You know, a short sale or something. But the problem is that with the sequence of waves coming, those half... Because as a matter of fact, this will make you sick. There's a guy here in Illinois now that's buying $500,000 houses for about $100,000 and under. So if that doesn't, you know, give you kind of an idea now, it's like... A $500,000 house for under $100,000.
How in the hell do you keep up with the property taxes on all that crap? You know?
Well, it doesn't matter because what happens is okay, if you buy a house, if you bought a $500,000 house for $100,000, the new property value is assessed at your purchase price.
Right.
Okay, so there you go. So, you know, it might be $1,000 or $2,000, you know, $1,000, $1,500, you know, a year, but you know, you're gonna rent. You know, he could rent that if he chose to rent it. He could rent that house out for, you know, $2,000, $3,000 a month. You know, because it's a $500,000 pad. So I mean, he'll get his rent money, and because it's gonna, because that's what's gonna happen, is it's gonna become a farmer, a landlord's market. You know, I mean, it's already that way now, where if you've got a rental property that's fairly decent, people are getting evicted, so they got to go somewhere, so they start renting. And, you know, so it's kind of a, you know, that situation. So when this next batch of, you know, foreclosures come through, it's going to hit harder than the first time, though, that's for sure. Because the first time around, I mean, it was, you know, 10 or about 3, 4, about 4 million. And I think to myself that it's going to be higher this next round in one setting. It's just going to be a foul score.
I don't have any doubt of that. Brian, when we moved to Georgia in 1996, okay, the year after we moved down here, the boom was on, the construction boom. My God, they were building houses and shopping malls and stuff. Just, it was nuts. And I looked at my wife back then, and I said, where in the hell are they getting the money to support all of this? You know, it's one thing to be able to borrow the money from a bank to build a subdivision full of million-dollar homes. It's another thing to be able to put buyers in those homes who can afford to pay for them and maintain them for the next, you know, 20 years.
Yep.
And I told her, I said, this is not sustainable. This is crazy.
And when I seen the same thing when we were cruising down Interstate 90 to towards Chicago, because I'm 60 miles west or northwest, so to speak, from there.
Henry area then.
And about 65 miles anyway. So I'm about north. I'm northwest. I'm right on the Illinois-Wisconsin border.
Yeah, you're up there by Crystal Lake, McHenry area.
Yeah, right. And within a 3-year period, we're almost connected to Chicago.
Yeah,
we're almost like the mini Chicago now, because everything they were building down 90 so rampant, and up until the crash, it finally stopped, but it got really close. I mean, like Sherland area is where it's kind of just past Sherland area. Which is about 25 minutes from Belvedere,
right?
Next city right outside from me, and you know we're connected to Belvedere, and it's ridiculous. I mean, it is so close. I mean, I bet if that boom in sales and the trend was still flying today, we would be connected to Chicago, most definitely.
Well,
there'd be no way. I mean,
and you have to look around and say, okay, what industry, what service sector did we bring to the area that supports all this growth?
Yeah.
I mean, did we have three or four, you know, did Boeing move a plant up here that we don't know about? What the hell are all these people doing for employment?
Yeah. Well, when I was younger, you know, I partied on all my money. I made really great money as a kid on the road and touring in bands and things like that. So, you know, I had nobody to take care of, so I was blowing it as quick as I got it, and just wasting money like a madman. So I had absolutely no credit. Okay, I might as well have had, you know, all the bad credit in the world. But when I walked into a bank out of humor, just to see, and they were willing to hand me a loan, I knew right then the world is in for crap. Because I looked at the guy and I said, I'm like, you're willing to hand me a $25,000 loan. Are you serious? I'm like, with all the bad credit I have, I mean, like cell phone issues and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you know, because I'd rent an apartment, move out, and I'd forget to turn off the utilities because I'd be on a plane heading to wherever the heck. And I wouldn't, you know, I'd have a utility bill racked up $600 and, you know, against me, and then I'd have to call in and pay it off before I could get it turned down in my next new apartment. And, you know, and all this stuff. I mean, I had all kinds of, and when he said he was willing, I was looking at him. I'm like, are you serious? You're lying to me. You got to be. Are they that desperate now, or something going wrong that bad, or somebody's doing something somewhere that messed up that I can get a loan? And he's like, well, why? What's the matter? And I said, because you're willing to hand me a loan. That's the problem. I said, thank God I'm responsible enough to know that I'm not going to get this. I'm not going to take the loan, because that 25 grand I could do some crazy stuff with, but, you know, I'm not taking the loan. So when
I remember when I had gotten a workers' comp settlement after I blew up my back, and I had 30 grand cash sitting in the bank, and they would not give me a $5,000 secured loan.
Wow.
I got 30 grand in your bank, and you won't loan me five? I need to close my account.
Mm-hmm.
Then they started giving me this. Oh, they had to have it in writing 30 days and all this. I said, can I cash a check? So I left $5 in the account, and they were like, abba, 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 abba. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to give me cash. I said, no, I don't want a check. I want cash. So it took them an hour or two to round up the cash, and then I opened a bank account at a different bank.
Yeah. I pretty much did the same thing. I left Bank of America, or Chase, and went over to another smaller bank.
Well, the funny thing was, this was the Bank of Illinois, and my mother was the supervisor of data processing for the bank, and she had worked there for 32 damned years.
Wow.
And I was like, you know what, man, to hell with you. I can see the kind of service I get from this bank. You know, none. That was a long time ago. That was back in the 80s.
So yesterday was really interesting. Speaking of Chase, I ended up with a bank account back there because of other business ventures and transactions that kind of stuck me in that position to go back to them schmoes, which I'm not exactly thrilled about. But anyway, so I was over there, and there was a lady in there pleading, or like trying to work out getting a refinance in her house so she doesn't lose her house. And she'd been at her job for, you know, 30 plus years, whatever. And she refinanced, her husband passed away. And then she ended up with one of those, I guess, like an arm rate loan. So they didn't explain to her that at any given time at a drop of a dime, her rate can shoot up.
You're going to get hosed. Yeah.
Yeah. They definitely hosed her, so to speak. And so she's in there just nervous. I mean, she was shaking. She's like, you know, I could hear her. I was kind of watching her and kind of dipping in the conversation a little bit and listening. And she's just losing it. You know, she's like, look, we've had this house in the family for X amount of years and blah, blah, blah. And it belonged to my dad. And, you know, I guess it wasn't like a newer house they were in. Apparently, obviously, it was like a house passed down to family member type of thing. And
right.
She's sweating her butt to, you know, keep it. And you know, everything was going good until her husband passed away, so to speak. So he, you know, left her. It just, shit happened, obviously. So she's in there trying to plead with him about working this out and getting a finance. And he's just giving her all these excuses on why they can't refinance. And, you know, her credit score was like 592 or something like that. And most banks are giving out credit loans and refinances at 583, you know. So she was, you know, up higher than that. But anyway, so she's trying, she's leaving. You know, and she's like, you know, I hope you guys rot in hell. And this guy's kind of like this. He gets the smirk on his face almost, right? And,
yeah.
You know, I'm almost like, wow. I was just really floored. I couldn't believe the kind of cocky at it. Because he's like, well, I'm sorry. And he leans back in his chair. Like, I was waiting for him to kick his feet up on the desk and lay back and be like, well, I can't do nothing about it, man. You know, like, you know, well, you might as well just leave your keys here and move out and I'll come lock up the house kind of thing.
Yeah, we'll cut the grass.
Yeah. You know, be sure to wash the windows, though, at least for us. So when we take over the house, you know, we can sell it faster. And, you know, so he's kind of got this smirky look on his face and kind of a grin, and I lost it. I came unglued. And so I just waited, and this lady, the bank teller, was like, Mr. Williams, can I talk to you, help you, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, just leave me alone. You know, I'm like, don't worry about it. I'll come get you if I see you're free, but just let me be. So she leaves. The lady, she gets up out of her chair, and she's pissed. She's throwing her papers. And I run over and pick him up and help him grab him for her. And she's like, just fucking forget him, you know. She's mad. I'm like, no, don't worry about it. Just come on. So I help her get him, and I walk her out to the car, and I explain to her what I do. And I just learned that you can well, if you're going to fight the mob or they're going to act like they're in the mob, well, beat them like you're in the mob. Because I found out through this little kind of training thing I discovered or found out about. I've got to kind of perfect it and learn more to the details, but I got to try it live yesterday. Right there on the spot, I ran through her. I said, you got your assignments and all that stuff. She's like, yeah, I got all my paperwork. Why? You know, and I'm trying to explain to her, calm her down. You know, hey, this is what's going on. This is what I do. Okay. I'm not here to help them strip the house from me. I'm here to help you kick them in the balls. You know, I said, when you were in there talking to him, I said, you were upset. And apparently you didn't see the little smirky ass grin he had on his face. I shouldn't be telling you, it's not making it any better, but that sent me over the look. That just made me lose my mind. Normally I wouldn't have interfered, really, but now I'm going to have a bad hair day and we're going to go to
now
town
I'm
on
pissed.
It. You're right. You know, I'm salty and pissed now. So I went through assignments immediately, and we pulled out all the issues wrong with their assignments, and it was actually really great because not only did they have the trust description and all that stuff, the security trust, the prospectus listed in her assignments, she had all these messed up assignments, and they used some of the robo-document mills out of California to have these made. And so that was like the gold mine. So I explained to her what was going on. And I took her pen or her marker, and I marked up all the messed up spots. And I said, no, what you're going to do is, you know, I said, just calm down. I got her to calm down. Just go in there, and you're going to tell this guy, you're going to explain to him, you have him, you know, you have proof, you have valid proof that they've committed fraud. And you'll seek a court date in which to sue them and, you know, fight it out for your house. And because they're actually listed on our trust, on the security trust, as Chase FSB or federal chartered or national chartered bank, which entitles her under RICO statute violations, you know, the three times rule. So she could get three times the amount of damage, but that also includes them paying for her attorney's fees. So on top of that. And so she kind of relaxed and thought about it. So I kind of walked her through it again, got her to remember it, and said, here's all the fraudulent parts. Here's what they've done, blah, blah, blah. And here's how they did it. Just mention these parts. And she went in there and sat down with the guy again. And, you know, she's like, well, he's like, well, I'm leaving, or I'm getting ready to leave me. She goes, no, we're going to talk. She goes, I just stormed out pissed. And she goes, you know, but we're going to renegotiate the terms of my loan. And she goes, technically, you can't do that, but we're gonna renegotiate. You're not gonna foreclose on it, you know, on anything. You're gonna do what I'm telling you to do. And as soon as I got, you know, because it took a minute to get her to, you know, I had explained
right.
to her, you tell them what they're gonna do. Don't give them the option to ask you or tell you blah blah blah. This is because if you get stuck, then at the moment when you get stuck and you need to call me over, we're cousins, okay? I said, don't worry about it. They're not going to go and do blood tests. We're cousins. So if I have to help come over and back you up, then whatever. But just go in there and lay it down. And so this guy's like calling his boss over. And so she laid it out to him, all the parts that I marked off and I made my notes, the side notes for.
Uh-huh.
They stopped their foreclosure process. Oh, Mrs. Johnson, I'm sure we could figure out something. I think we could maybe renegotiate something here possibly. She goes, well, I'd like to go into mediation because you violated my contractual right for mediation in the first place. You took it right to court instead of going through mediation. And you apparently took it upon yourself to think that I wasn't going to stand up and fight for my property or try to save the house. And you streamlined it right to court versus mediation first. So, you know, there's going to be some remedy to this, you know, but you're not going to foreclose on anything. And so they, okay, all right, we'll talk it out. We'll, you know, so I gave her my number. So I'm waiting to hopefully hear on what they come up with, because they definitely stuck it to her. But she went in there and gave them the riot act. She did what I pretty much everything that I told her to say and do, and told them how it was going to function, and how they violated their contractual right into not taking it to mediation first, and can be fined for that. So that was really cool. So she came out, gave me a big old hug, and she's like, can I do anything for you? I'll come clean your house. No. I said it was just, you know, a thing that I was there. That guy was acting like a prick.
Just squeeze them until they fall off, honey. I want you to do to them.
Right. I told her, I said, look, okay, they don't own the property, all right, you know? They can't refinance you on something they truly don't own, all right? I said, it's going to be hard for me to explain this all to you. I said, but they sold your note over the stock market, okay? So they don't even own the original note that you have. I said, so you go for the gusto. You tell them you want the house free and clear. I said, unless you go get an attorney and fight for that, I said, if you plan on trying to just finish this off on your own, then tell them, you know, you want all that money knocked off and you'll give them the rest of the note for, you know, $15,000-$20,000 of it. What's left? You know, knock it all off and you'll give them, you'll pay $20,000 and get rid of the other $100,000 and you're good to go. And you'll make payments on $20,000. That way your house payments come down. You'll only be making, you know, $300 a month payments. And you got more than enough to do whatever else you're, you know, you've got money in your pocket. And she's, so that's what apparently she's going to plan on doing, is going to stick it to him first. And, you know, I just said, leave yourself option. Let them know that if it don't go the way you want it, you're going to seek legal advice and get an attorney. So, but she went in there and she read them the riot act and showed them her notes, and they complied. So it kind of gave me proof in what I'd learned about, because I can, before early on, if you mentioned, I remember kind of or at all that I mentioned where if I got deputized,
right.
Where we could force, you can actually force them into mediation, because they're actually supposed to take you into mediation before going into a foreclosure court to negotiate your situation.
Right.
So that's where you would obviously present your first findings of fraud or any findings of fraud on a mass scale to prevent from having to go to court to have the mediator decide, hey, wait a minute, you do.
Yeah, you done screwed the pooch, guys. You better figure out a way to put the shit back in the horse.
Right. If you can reverse the flow process, you better find a miracle and do it now, because these people are about to commit an act of God on your ass and claim you're going to get the holy enema.
Yep.
You know.
Well, yeah, you know, you're right, because, and I guess I just wasn't, you know, focused clearly when you were talking about the whole mediation thing before, you know, early on. But yeah, I mean, every contract has that stipulation in it that you have to go to arbitration or mediation before it goes to court.
Right.
You know, that's the parachute clause for most of the firms, so that they don't get their butts handed to them in a court of law.
Right, right. Well, you know, the thing was that these guys just, you know, I don't know. Lately, you know, I've been looking for trouble, like, seriously, because I've got that really bad itch. I mean, like,
you know, there's got to be an angle here, a federal angle on fraud negatively impacting interstate commerce. There's got to be something in the commerce regulations that'll.
Well, yeah, there probably is, because the negative, well, the fraud and the negative impact would be the loss of tax. Probably.
Oh, yeah.
Loss of tax revenue earned by the city, because and I caught onto that, and I foreseen that coming, but it didn't become a reality until the other day when they made on the news a local news announcement at midnight, of course, here in my city, that the city plans on holding or putting a $300 tax property tax revenue increase on everybody's property, pretty much without even a vote. I mean, like, they're just going to railroad it right through, and you don't get an option to say anything, because they're trying to claim, which is fairly somewhat possible, but they're trying to claim that they had a loss of revenue because of the market scandal. So,
well, sure they did. Look at what they lost in filing fees when they were doing all the MERS crap, because never got filed at the county courthouse.
Right.
There was a couple of counties in California that were going after some of the big boys for like $13 billion in filing fees.
Right. And the jacked up thing is, though, was like during that whole time, you know, even last year, my property taxes went up $250 last year and $200 the year before. And let me tell you, I do not live in a house you would brag about. I mean, the inside is mechanically great and fixed and sound, okay, but the outside, I left it to look crap, because I've got a $5,000 drum kit sitting in my front room. I've got a $1,000 TV in the dining room, and I kind of live in the border hood, you know, so I don't want to look like I've got anything worth value in this house. So I figure, you know, the house, it kind of looks like a train wreck, you know, it needs a paint job. But for them to say here's what's screwy. They're saying my property value during the whole scandal thing, my property value somehow went up like $3,000 or $4,000 during the whole scandal. Yeah. And I do not live in a house that anybody would normally want to buy, you know, unless they were going to use it for a rental or move into it to fix it up, because it's a decent fixer upper. I mean, it's new plumbing in it and all that stuff and blah, blah, blah. All the mechanicals are just like any new house. But the outside, it needs siding. So, you know, and that's all they assess it for, is the outside and so on. And I've not even painted this thing since I've lived here 7 years. And it needed a paint job 10 years ago. So they've jacked up my property taxes $250+ already during the crunch. So they're trying to act like, and even my mom's went up. She's two doors over. And hers went up.
You're living in the socialist utopia of Illinois or Chicagoland, as we used to call it.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, I mean, for them to sit and act like they lost property taxes, I really don't think so. I think it's just their bullshit, you know, excuse to say they, you know, lost it and then try to milk more money to pay for, you know, the their buddies' road contracts and all that crap, and keep the fat boys with their fat pockets fat, because, you know, that's all it seems to be doing. But, you know, as far as tying it to that federal issue, yeah, I mean, that can definitely, because the loss of revenue and property tax value. if it's legitimate losses. So,
you know, they used the Supreme Court, and they just recently used the Wicker argument, the Wicker case. The Wicker case was from the 1930s, 35 or 39. There's a guy in Iowa who was growing wheat to feed his family. And the government said, you can't do that because you're having a negative impact on commerce, because you're not going into the marketplace to buy the wheat. So you're affecting the price of wheat. And the court ruled in favor of the government and said the guy couldn't buy it, couldn't grow his own wheat. He had to go buy it.
Wow.
Yeah. How crazy is that? You can't grow food for your own family. You have to go buy it because you're having a negative impact on interstate commerce. And that was, you know, there's an old saying, a switch in time saves nine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what that saying is all about, was the Wicker case. The Supreme Court had already shot down two of Roosevelt's farm programs as being unconstitutional. And it was pretty certain they were going to shoot down the Wicker case. So he threatened to stack the Supreme Court with 13 justices so that he could get a favorable outcome. And at the last moment, a couple of the holdouts switched their opinion, their vote. So the switch in time saved nine justices on the Supreme Court.
Wow. That's interesting. But, yeah, so, you know, it just, I don't know, the huge amounts of, like, well, as this is the new one, because I haven't got to lay this one down on yet. I forgot about this one. Because I know I haven't, I don't think I've seen a report like this one yet. I'm pretty sure I haven't. I'm almost definite because I got really excited when I found this out. One of the clients I'm doing a report for went to a bank and financed their property and got their loan, blah, blah, blah. Well, that bank securitized it, right?
Right.
And did all this stuff, whatever. So now they're selling it over the stock market, doing their thing with it as a securitized loan. Well, the guys need to refinance it. So they went and refinanced it under another mortgage company, right?
Right.
Another top five bank. So not all. So they go to the new bank, they get their loan, pay off the property, the debt to the other bank. They transfer their title and do their thing. The new bank securitizes the loan, right? So what I'm trying to figure out is, we proved it, you know, in the tracking, in the trust, it actually shows you, it tells you right out front and blatant, right in the summary, who the participants in the securitization process are, right? So it shows right where the ending, where the note ends up at in the trust, right? So
right.
When he went to the first one, it got securitized. So when they securitize it and the title goes to one place and the note goes to the other, then he went to the second bank and they securitized it. Now the same property has two securities on the stock market.
Yep, on the same property.
Yep, two different trust descriptions. That's quite a bit illegal. That's a whole lot of that's a whole lot of securities fraud going on. They can't do that. You can't sell the same – one guy can't be – and the funny thing is both trusts, both securities and trusts are still active. They're still being sold. I mean, that's 17. You can't sell. I mean, not only can you not sell the same property twice, but you can't sell two securities attached to the same property at the same time. That's not possible. And
right.
When the guy refinanced from the first bank. Now, see, here's where it gets funny, because when the guy refinanced from the first bank, and the first bank took the money from the second bank, they've committed fraud because they showed them a bogus note. So they handed the first bank. I mean, even though they know they're in the same circle, you know, and jerking everybody else off, but they went and handed them a fake note saying this guy owed us, you know, $450,000 for this property, and blah blah blah. Or here's what the loan was, and here's how much he owes. The remaining debt was $450,000. So he refinanced for that $450K, and the second bank paid the first bank. So being that they both had every intent of securitizing the loan on the stock market, because that's what they do, do you think the first bank really would have, should have thought about it? Like, hey, wait a minute. Those guys really don't own that property. They don't have a real true note, or they're not a true party of interest to that property. So they went and paid them anyway. I mean, seriously. It was like the buckets of the retardation level just shot through the roof on this, because, I mean, they're all in the same scandal. They're all in the same racket. They're all doing the same, you know, RICO statute violations from one end of the graph to the other. And the second bank still paid the first bank on a note that's bogus.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, wow, really? I mean, and then half of his assignments had a good chunk of his assignments, like his notice of default was bad because it was recorded in August, or they sent the, it was made in August, like the second, like August 15th, let's say, and it wasn't recorded until 3 months later. And that's what I'm still trying to figure out, is how do they get it notarized and then still be an active, valid document 3 months later? Because you have to record it within a, you know, a 30-day period. It has
right.
to be recorded in the county after notarization. So it's like, really, wow.
Well, I was going to say, it's not as if there's any actual rules. You know, they just make it up as they go along.
Yeah, they definitely, you know, they try to rewrite them. Well, there was a guy the other day in the Senate, or not the Senate, but one of the banking CEO attorneys or whatever. He was in front of Congress trying to plead and kiss ass. Saying that robo-signatures are legal because, as far as they're concerned, they had so much paperwork to process and do that they couldn't possibly keep up with the process. So they had to, you know, have people just randomly sign paperwork. So because of the influx of the paperwork that they, you know, created by giving out all these loans, which were fraudulent, mind you, but to keep up with fraudulent process, to keep the fraud money coming in, they had to create more fraud. But he's trying to call that legal. So, I don't know.
That's nuts. Well, I don't know how much longer this game can be sustained, quite honestly. But I've been saying that since at least 2007.
Yeah, well, you know, they're going to play it. They're going to do whatever to whoever. and not think twice about it. And you know, until it all falls, because it's gonna when this next rate another 11 million foreclosures. Okay, let's just out of humor say that there's another 11 million foreclosures coming by the end of this year or the next 2 years. And it's probably going to be more than that because there was 56 million. They've actually come up to a rough estimate at this point of 56 million securitized bad loans. So out of that, we'll just call it a third of that. No, that's too many. I can't even think of kind of wrap my head around that. Just, you know, let's say 5 million, 6 million foreclosures in the next year and a half. That many more foreclosures, what it's going to do to the economy, it's going to collapse. It ain't going to matter if people got freaking jobs, because
property even if it was only a sixth, which I think that would be a gift. You know, you're talking about 9.3 million foreclosures.
Yeah.
And like a sixth, one sixth, that would be a gift.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. That would be. I would probably almost, you know,
a quarter would put you at 14 million. So,
you know, I don't.
I'd say you're probably likely to see one in three at best. That would be a best case scenario. But, and especially with everything that's going on, you know, around the globe, when you factor in, you know, Greece, China, the Eurozone, you know, Spain, Italy, Ireland, all this. I mean, the wheels are coming off the damn central economic planning wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And they're working furiously to keep stuffing the manure back into the dead horse that they've been beating for decades.
Oh, yeah. You know, it just, oh, speaking of crazy stuff, there was a posting I caught. I didn't get to read it, all of it. But it was a posting about Greenland. No.
Ireland.
Was it Greenland or Ireland? Maybe it was Ireland. Or Iceland.
Iceland.
It was a post about Iceland. I said Greenland. Iceland.
I was wondering if you were combining a couple of nations.
Yeah, I'm going Polish with my countries. Iceland is actually, because if you remember or knew anything about Iceland,
yeah,
before
they're
market
out
crash,
from under it. They're actually in
the yeah.
full swing.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they told the banks to go pound sand.
Yeah.
So this is manufactured debt. You created it. You deal with it. Get the hell out of our country.
Yeah, they went back to, and, you know, because they had it going on way before, you know, anyways. I mean, they had, like, the best economic situation in the globe going on apparently at the time from everything I caught and read and learned about. I mean, they had it really going on until they made the mistake of letting industry move, certain industries move in, doing, you know, harboring, you know, that those steam plants and all that stuff moving in to generate power in the mountains and all that, and lifting sanctions for these corporations to come in and build all these plants, and then the banks lending out loans to these. That one guy, they lent him umpteen billion dollars, and he went out and he bought strip malls in London and all these high-end fashion stores and buildings and things, and then ended up, you know, in jets and boats and whatever else, and lavish parties for everybody and their uncle. And they ended up foiling, and that's kind of what started their downfall, was the two guys that borrowed all that money and then, you know, slapping, you know, Wall Street in their situation because they invested, you know, a whole bunch of their money from their public works employees, things like that, you know, all their stocks and stock monies and whatever from their retirement funds into the Wall Street mortgage-backed securities, that ended up biting them in the rear. So they turned it around. I mean, I know they're not as huge as America, but, I mean, that's got to be, you know, a kind of a hint on, hey, you know. But I guess there's too many people with their hands in our pockets and everything else to make a logical, you know,
right,
thought happen and or make a logical move and maybe consider looking at what a smaller mid-level country would do or has done to turn things around. But whatever, you know, it's some way one of those, you know, they're going to pay. Well, they're not going to pay for it. We'll pay for it. If, you know, it just seems that they're too busy, you know, covering each other's rear ends. Nobody's gone to jail yet. It's been since 06. Nobody's been seeing prison time. Nobody's seeing any major. Well, they're seeing bank fines, big deal, you know, because they'll probably get more bailouts for the bank fines. So, you know, somewhere at some point in time, something's going to give. And then everybody will be on a hole. But, you know, I just think the president and everybody in the government, there's too many people covering it up that, you know, the SNL days, a whole bunch of people went to jail. You know.
Yep. That is a fact.
A whole bunch went to jail.
And we're currently in the lowest incidence of prosecutions for bank and securities fraud ever.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess, you know, as long as other guys out there that are trying to do the same thing I'm doing, we can beat them up one mortgage guy at a time, I guess. I mean, I seriously kind of, I don't necessarily go out of my way because it seems to find me.
Right.
Where I've been in situations where everybody's, you know, these mortgage guys fall into my lap or whether I'm in a bank, actually in a bank doing my own personal transactions. And, you know, I just, on occasion, though, I do feel like a monster, and I just want to go beat one of them up, so I'll stick my nose in somebody's business where it kind of doesn't belong and help them. Just because of my anger, I guess. I'm going to need a shrink one of these days. That's probably why they don't let me work at the Postal Service.
Yeah, no kidding.
But anyway, well, I'm going to run, bud. It's we're past
all right, man.
And I'm going to make the announcements and then call it a night.
Good wrapping with you, man.
And I'll see y'all later. Thanks for calling in and everybody else, and great having you on, Ronnie, as usual. And I'll catch up to y'all later, off and on, sometime during the week anyway. But I'm going to run the list of shows and for the week and catch everybody up again next Friday on Foreclosure Help with Me.
All right, so, man. God bless, brother.
You too, bud. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
So we got radio programs for the week, Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time with Fed Up Frank, with Frank Winkle, who is being substituted currently by our buddy Ron Golden. Monday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Constitution Hour with none other than Ron Golden. And Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time is Patriot Family Chat with Hollis Buchanan and Bill Strong. And Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Right from the Left Coast with Linda Sills. And Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time with Patriot Education with Terry Rowan. And Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Foreclosure Help with yours truly, Brian Williams and Ken Bennett, when she's available. And Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Exposing the Illusion with Michael Magic, who is apparently going to be having a substitution for a small amount of time as well, but we'll be back soon. So I'm not sure who the substitution will be or is, but check in, listen anyway, and see who's there. All is well. Other than that, all is great, and thanks everybody for joining us.